On this week's 51%, you'll learn about a piece of Japanese subculture that focuses on girls and women. It's an art form called shoujo manga.
So it's a fantasy, most of them, but it's very powerful.
We then turn from art to the natural world and one woman's obsession with pigeons. Plus, we shine a spotlight on witches. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. A professor at a college in New York has a keen interest in a piece of Japanese subculture through which artists express a different path for girls and women, one not based solely on traditions of being a wife and mother. Think of shoujo manga as girls' comics, kind of. Well, I'll let Hiromi Tsuchiya Dolazzi explain it. She's associate professor of Japanese at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York, and teaches a course in Japanese pop culture that includes a focus on manga. She was instrumental in bringing the exhibition World of Shoujo Manga, Mirrors of Girls' Desires, to the college. The show focuses on women's changing roles in Japanese society. Traditionally, the predominant theme of girls' manga has been love. Boys' manga deals with fighting. That has changed.
Shoujo manga.
What is it?
Okay, shoujo means girls, or maybe adolescent girls.
Adolescent girls.
Yes, okay. And manga means comics, or maybe graphic, more like graphic novels. Although shoujo manga, it's, you know, readers are not really just limited to young girls. Shoujo manga magazine probably has target audience, like age from, you know, elementary school to teenagers. But women of all ages read shoujo manga. I still read shoujo manga, and there are a lot of different, you know, types of manga with diverse topics and themes. So it's really hard to explain what shoujo manga is. But one simple definition is manga, you know, stories, works published in girls' comic magazines are called shoujo manga.
What stands out for you in this exhibition?
The works displayed here from kind of earlier shoujo manga, starting from 60s to maybe mid 70s. Most of the authors, you know, artists are still productive. So they, you know, draw manga not just for adolescent, you know, young readers, but also, you know, as the readers grew older, they had to create manga for grown-up women also, right? So some of the manga are very, you know, has very vivid sexual, you know, description, you know, meant to be read by adult audience.
So show me one.
Okay.
Of that example, please. And the artists are both men and women?
Yes. Earlier, actually, shoujo manga started to appear in the 1950s. And most of the manga artists were actually men. And they, maybe because of lack of female artists, and then many male artists who drew manga partly for the purpose of making money. And then eventually they wanted to establish their names in the, you know, boys' comic magazine. So here is some example of graphic shoujo graphic works by shoujo manga artist, and this is an adaptation of Chinese literature, classical literature, called Kinpei Bai. This is a classic novel from Ming Dynasty, like 15th to 17th century.
Right, the original of this, they say, is a classic of Chinese erotic literature written during the Ming Dynasty, 1368 to 1644.
Mm-hmm. Right.
How are girls depicted in general? Is it a positive connotation? Is it are there any lessons or things to be taken away from a female audience from this art form directed at them?
Mm. Very positive. Manga is really the mirror of girls' desires. So each work reflects what girl audience want to see, or, you know, maybe some stories that they cannot have in their real life. So it's a fantasy, most of them, but it's very powerful. Some girl heroines fight, against male enemies, become super, heroine, or some stories, explore the, different expression of female sexuality by using male gender, not female bodies, but, like a depict love between pretty boys. So that is a kind of the interesting way to reflect the girls' audience, desire to explore their sexuality.
That's a big difference, though, from, some of the imagery in America.
I think probably American audience people might be shocked to see some of the graphic nature of shoujo manga. Are they really, drawn, depicted for young girls? Because some of them are very, these, artworks are pretty safe. Not vivid enough. But if you read some of the manga copies I prepare, the manga books, some of them are really pretty shocking. Some shoujo manga deal with sexual violence. Some, depict, vivid lovemaking scenes, or rape, incestual, scenes, and so on. So many of the manga works actually deal with very serious topics. And then I think it's a kind of a function of the catharsis, or, kind of readers, girl readers who read manga feel like the manga artist, showing compassion to them or speaking for them,
Not trying to sweep difficult topics under the rug,
uh-huh.
but actually bringing them to the forefront.
Yeah, exactly.
It sounds like.
Yeah, and then I'm sure there are a lot of girls who are abused by their parents, or have experience in sexual violence and so on, but they cannot say that out loud in public. So manga, in a way, kind of narrate. Show the voice for them. That's part of the function, roles of shoujo manga. And another thing is that I kind of briefly mentioned about using boys', bodies, or, physicality to express, sexual desire or eroticism. The reason is that authors try to maintain distance from female bodies. Female bodies sometimes, when you write about or, express love scenes and so on, always if you are dealing with men and women, there's always issues of power, inequality, right? So I think one of the purpose for dealing with boys in shoujo manga is because of distance from, their body, readers' bodies themselves.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yet in these pieces intended for an older female audience, mm-hmm. I couldn't help but notice that the bodies are, they're not stick figures.
Mm,
they're actually
right.
more realistic,
right.
and yet a comic book,
uh-huh.
although, I don't want to say that because that's very American
yeah.
sounding. It's interesting to me. It's something
yeah.
that actually was the most shocking for me, not what's depicted, but mm-hmm. the fact that the bodies are as they are.
Right. I think these are for grown-up women. And, typical shoujo manga girls' image you have is like stick-like bodies and big eyes, unnatural, unrealistic. I think partly because those illustration images show some kind of hesitance to, enter womanhood. So I think manga targeted at young audience, kind of tend to depict fantasy, unrealistic dreams, and they want to stay in girls' period, as long as they can.
Oh, I don't blame them.
And then often in manga works, manga artists, they avoid depicting marriage, which is very different from For example, Disney animation, marriage is like always the happy ending, right? But earlier shoujo manga, you know, they often show hesitance to depict marriage because especially women, girls who grew up in 70s, 80s, marriage was never a positive thing in their real lives. In Japan, there is a family system called iye. You know, it's kind of different from Western, you know, idea of home. The idea is that all the male sons are the inheritance of family names, and then women are supposed to leave homes, families, and then get married, and eventually become mothers, and then, you know, serve for the prosperity of their new families, right? So women, girls, were often raised or grown up, viewed as a kind of secondary to boys. And higher education, of course not now, but long time ago, were considered unimportant for girls. And even my generation, I was in high school in the, you know, mid-80s. There are some of my friends chose 2 years, 2 years college, you know, education, junior college, because their parents recommended it. That's better for women. Okay, so, but of course now, actually the number of women who go to four-year college outnumbered that of men. So society and culture is changing. But another thing is that arranged marriage was very common, you know. I think it's still now, but not as much as before. So their parents choose the husband for them. Okay? So they cannot have positive image of marriage. So I think that's why they tend to depict girl image, you know, very differently from actual, you know, women. Oh, one thing I want to mention, American audience might be interested, is that many of manga inspired by American girls' fictions, novels, like Little Women. I'll show you the image of Little Women by Louisa May Alcott.
Well, this was an important point.
Yeah. Here.
Oh, my goodness, of course.
Isn't that pretty? Yeah. And then if you know, characteristic, especially early ones, girl image has really big eyes, right? And these eyes, you know, like a prototype of girl image did not just, you know, appear in the 50s, but it's inherited from the tradition of Japanese girls' magazine from early 20th century. Girls' magazines were created for schoolgirls by the government's focus on, you know, female education in 1900s. And then, you know, girls' magazines were creating around that time. And they didn't have comics, but they had, like, illustration and, you know, fictional fantasy stories. And many of the stories were, you know, inspired by, you know, American classics.
That was Hiromi Tsuchiya Dolazzi, associate professor of Japanese at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York. And while the exhibition at Vassar concludes in November, the world of shoujo manga can be seen in February at Baruch College in New York City and from mid-March until the end of May at Ohio State University in Columbus. From learning to appreciate an art form to learning to appreciate a natural form that sometimes gets a bad rap, reporter Martina Castro from KALW admits she harbors a bit of a fascination with pigeons and is out to dispel related myths.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Pigeons pecking, pigeons bathing, pigeons flying, pigeons walking, foraging and scavenging, the pigeons doing everything. Pigeons cooing.
Okay, so I'm a little obsessed with pigeons. I'm not sure when it started exactly, but at some point, I realized I couldn't keep my eyes off of them. I take photos of them whenever I get the chance, making patterns in the sky as they play in the wind, huddling on telephone lines, or bathing in the dirty water that pools on the side of the road. I think it's fascinating to see how they survive alongside us in all of our filthy urban glory. The thing is, I don't know that much about pigeons.
And aren't they like, they're not even real birds, right?
So I asked around the newsroom to see what others know about them.
Pigeons, they're very smart.
I know that they are the rats of the sky.
They are the rats of the sky.
They are rats with wings.
Well, everyone calls them winged rats. Rats pretty amazing also.
I don't know anything about them, but I've heard, you know, you hear that they're disease carriers.
I think people think they spread disease.
You can eat them. They're called squab when you eat them.
And the thing is that I really like birds. When I see urban birds, it really is calming, like a finch or like a, basically anything that isn't a pigeon.
You know how when a car leaves a puddle of oil and it rains, it gets those beautiful sort of colors, like a rainbow of colors? It's the same thing with pigeons. It's this kind of dirty, ugly city thing, but it has this weird spot of beauty. So I know that there's that and the poop.
Yeah, so I wanted to get beyond what people think and find someone who really knows about pigeons. And I found this person.
My name is Elizabeth Young, and I'm the founding director for Mikaku Pigeon and Dove Rescue.
I met her at San Francisco's Dolores Park.
Humans have done terrible injustices to pigeons and have very strong opinions that are, for the most part, inaccurate.
Young started the rescue back in 2007. At the time, she was volunteering with San Francisco's City Animal Shelter, and she saw that pigeons were dropped off but never adopted, meaning they were often euthanized. So she set out to find people to take the birds in. Young brought one of these rescues as a surprise guest to our meeting.
This is Mr. Margaret. Hello. Maybe get some of his little gruntings.
Mr. Margaret looks like an elegant, portly version of a white dove. But technically, he is
a king pigeon, bred for meat and sold as squab.
You can eat them. They're called squab.
Mr. Margaret somehow escaped the butcher and was found wandering around Golden Gate Park. Over the years, Young developed a network of volunteers to help her find foster homes for the birds she rescues, or to get them permanently adopted. And I should point out, the adoptable pigeons are ones like Mr. Margaret, totally domesticated. The ones we see out in the streets, those are called feral pigeons.
There are 300 wild species of pigeons and doves all over the world. The feral pigeons are descendants from rock pigeons that were brought over in the 1600s. From Europe and the Middle East and North Africa, where they're native.
Over time, some of these got away or were released, resulting in the breed that we now know as our city pigeon. And city pigeons are pretty much the same, no matter what city you're in, Chicago, New York, San Francisco. But the key point Young wants to make is this.
They're all here because of us.
Our fault. And in her mind, our responsibility. So that's why Young is pretty frustrated by all the negative myths out there about them.
This is kind of dirty, ugly city thing.
Pigeons love to be clean. Pigeons are crazy about bathing. They're very meticulous about their hygiene. So if you ever see a dirty pigeon, it's because they're living in a dirty environment.
I think people think they spread disease.
As far as disease risk, that is a big myth. Pigeons have amazing immune systems. They're actually really resistant to avian flu. They're also resistant to West Nile virus. So we are much more of a danger to their health than they are to ours.
But some myths are true, like this one.
Pigeons, they're very smart.
Pigeons have been rated up in the top for animal intelligence. They self-recognize in mirrors, which is something that children can't do until they're a certain age. They recognize human faces and remember them. They can abstract those human faces from a photo to an actual person, which is it's a concept that most animals can't process.
And then Young says something I've never heard before.
They're completely loyal. They mate for life, and they are totally devoted to their mate and their young. In fact, if you want to brag on family values, I mean, pigeons have unbelievable family values. And
so when you say mate for life, as in they choose one mate?
they do, and they're very deliberate, and they choose a mate, and they stick together through thick and thin. I've worked now directly with almost 600 pigeons and doves, and in these past 6 years, I've seen, I think, 2 divorces.
They're monogamous too? As you can imagine, the more I hear about the pigeon, the more I fall in love with this humble little bird.
Okay, so you put it
there. You go.
Hey. You go. Sorry, you can just get them settled.
Okay.
Kind of, sort of reassure them a little bit.
At some point, Young hands over Mr. Margaret. She tells me to cradle him in one arm and hold him tight up against my chest. Pigeons like the security. He coos and eventually settles in.
I think it's really important. I think if our world was nice to a creature as common and humble as a pigeon, that it would be nice, it would like trickle up compassion. All they want to do is live.
In that way, the city pigeon isn't so different from the city person. Maybe if we take the time to appreciate them, to recognize their struggle and their beauty, we'll find something more in ourselves. For Cross Currents, I'm Martina Castro.
There's a new season brewing for a television series about the Salem witch trials. A scholar puts one of the witches under the spotlight. Lilia Fukin has the story from Virginia.
A lot of the new television show Salem is pure fantasy, but it offers a gripping reinvention of the witch trials in the year 1692.
You have pled guilty to the practice of witchcraft, but such a plea is not sufficient to spare your life.
In reality, a significant figure from the trials is a woman named Tituba. Tituba was the minister's slave and one of the first to be sentenced to prison for witchcraft. In the TV show, Tituba is portrayed as a beautiful witch of African heritage. But Paige Laws, dean of the Honors College at Norfolk State University, busts that myth.
Tituba was an indigenous person, most scholars believe, from South America.
So how did she end up in a hysterical Puritan Massachusetts settlement?
She was captured by slavers and brought over to Barbados. And she's bought by a Massachusetts minister named Samuel Parris. And they move to Salem, where he becomes the preacher for the village.
And Laws says Tituba was a mysterious character in the trials.
Tituba is the figure who's sometimes been called the instigator and then other times been considered the victim.
We do know that Tituba was imprisoned, but after her release in 1693, she disappears from all records. Laws is particularly fascinated with the transformation of Tituba as her story is retold.
Over time, as she's depicted in various sources, she becomes more of an African than an Indian.
Why the change?
It seems to suit some psychological purpose. The fear in the white imagination of Indians dissipated as Indians unfortunately died off from disease or were forced westward. And the concern and guilt over slavery took the place of some of those concerns, and Tituba became black.
Even today, in the flashy new TV series Salem, a black witch is preferred by the screenwriters.
Tituba remains a very important character. She is still a black character rather than an Indian, and still a witch and still making trouble in Salem.
1, 2, 3, and 4. Raise the devil to our door. Call the pig, the wolf, the ram. Come to the circle, all who can.
I'm Lilia Fukin.
And that's our show for this week. We hope you'll come to the circle if you can and join us for the next one. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again or visit the 51% archives, go to our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1322.